It's been a busy few days for the Green Bay Packers with B.J. Raji retiring and bringing in tight end Jared Cook for a visit. How much salary cap room do the Packers have? We'll find out with former NFL agent Joel Corey of CBS Sports. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about free agency, and to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning.
Expert interview.
We have Joel Corey of CBS Sports, former NFL agent. Mr. Corey, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing this morning?
Very good. Thanks for joining us on the show. Joel, now that Nick Perry's latest deal with the Green Bay Packers is done, how much salary cap space do the Packers have, and how do they rank compared to other teams in the NFL?
The Packers have a shade over $15 million cap room, which isn't great, but at the same time, if you look at what the average cap room is, it's about $20 million. That's including a team like San Francisco that hasn't done much in free agency and still sitting with over $50 million in cap space. The Packers aren't in the same situation where they have a little under $3 million, or the Jets where they've got like basically $4.5 million. But the Packers aren't a team which typically goes out and gets in the free agency market anyway and tries to re-sign their own, so it's less critical for them to have an abundance of cap room than other teams.
Yeah. I'm kind of interesting how the rookie pool works and how much that impacts the salary cap and how much salary cap room the Packers will need to sign the rookies. Can you help explain that for me?
Yeah, the rookie pool, in a sense, is a pool within the overall salary cap. It's like a cap within the cap. And you can only pay rookies a certain amount, and each pick has an assigned max and minimum value. And since the 2011 CBA started, they've taken away a lot of the flexibility to negotiate, particularly with first-round picks, because you used to have guys get deals like Sam Bradford, where there are a lot of escalators and incentives that can be earned where the deal would pay him like someone who's an established starter before stepping on the field at all. In the offseason, the top 51 cap numbers count against the cap. That changes once the rosters get pared down for the start of the regular season and everyone's going to count. Mm-hmm. So really, out of the basically $7.2 million of cap room that the Packers are going to need to sign their complement of draft picks, which includes the two compensatory picks, only about $3 million of that is going to count on the cap during the offseason, the first three picks, because it's the top 51 cap numbers. But you have to keep in mind that once the regular season starts, everybody counts, including guys on injury reserve and practice squad. So the team is taking a big picture view and knowing that ultimately every rookie that they keep will count. But just for accounting purposes, between now and late August, they only have to count, I'd say, 40% of it.
Very interesting. So with that being said, it was reported the Packers are bringing in tight end Jared Cook for a visit, which is big news in Green Bay because he would kind of be the first big-name free agent they'd sign, presumably, from outside the organization. So is it safe to say they'd have enough room to sign him once they kind of take the rookies into account and they'd have enough room?
Oh, yeah, no question, because Jared Cook's not going to be the big-ticket item he was when he signed up the Rams. That was a five-year, $35 million deal, and he never really lived up to the contract. So I would say at most you can probably get him for $3 million a year on a one, or maybe you can get him for like $8 million on a two if you want to go for 2 years. And if you got him over 2 years, obviously the cap number would be lower, because if you wanted to give him some sort of signing bonus or have money which would be treated as signing bonus, classified as a roster bonus or something, then that could be prorated over the 2 years.
Very, very interesting stuff here. We're talking to Joel Corey of CBS Sports here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Joel, some other big news recently in Green Bay is that B.J. Raji just retired. And I know because he was a free agent, he won't count against the salary cap. But I'm just kind of curious here, when players who are under contract retire, how do they affect the salary cap? Because I know some people have kind of speculated whether that could happen with a guy like Julius Peppers, who's 36 years old. We're speaking hypothetically here, but I'm just curious.
Well, if you have you're given a huge signing bonus or something, and the proration hasn't run out, then the team can recoup the signing bonus from you if you retire prematurely. Now, I'll give you an example. If your base salary goes away, obviously, so that's not going to count on the cap, because you're not going to be earning salary, a base salary that you're not playing under. I'll give you an example of how this would work. Let's say, hypothetically, and this is only hypothetically, mm-hmm. Clay Matthews decided to retire tomorrow.
Okay.
He got a $20.5 million signing bonus in 2013 that was prorated 2013 through 17. That's $4.1 million on the cap. The mm-hmm. proration left in 2016-17. The Packers would be entitled to recoup the $4.1 million signing bonus in 2016 and in 2017. So he would be cutting them a check for $8.2 million if the Packers wanted to exercise their rights. If Clay Matthews retired tomorrow. That's hypothetically. I don't want anyone to get along like starting some sort of like new rumor or breaking any news. I'm just using this for illustrative purposes only. So what would happen is they could only collect the money as each year played out. So it would be 4.1 in 2016. You'd have to cut him the check if he set out that entire year. And then if he decided to sit out the 2017 year, then they would get the $4.1 million check if they decided to pursue it. And as they pursued it, they would get a cap credit back for any money they collected. So hypothetically, he retires now, sits out the whole season, cuts the check for $4.1 million. In 2017, they get a $4.1 million cap credit. Same thing occurs in 17. In 2018, they get the cap credit in 2018.
I got you. That makes it a lot clearer. Thank you for providing that example, and I'm hoping you can make something else a little bit more clear as well, as with the exclusive rights free agents. The Packers have a player safety, Chris Banjo, who received an offer from the Packers, but to my knowledge, he hasn't signed a contract yet. Does he have to accept their offer, and how much leverage does he have to negotiate?
Well, if there's such a thing as negative leverage, that's what he has. It's really a misnomer when you say he's an exclusive rights free agent, because he's not free. Uh-huh. The Packers have his exclusive rights, so he's not going anywhere, at least for one more year. And what usually happens with exclusive rights players is they sign their tender for 1 year. In his case, he's got a weird situation, because in 2014, he got played enough games, three, to have his minimum salary move up, but didn't play enough games to get the year of service. So he's got a higher minimum salary than he normally would have because he got the extra salary credit. So he's at $675,000 this year. I'd say it's pretty much a certainty he's going to play for $675,000 this year, then become a restricted free agent next year when he has 3 years of service towards free agency. And I'll give you two examples of another team of guys who were in this boat this time last year. C.J. Anderson and Brandon Marshall, both of the Denver Broncos, played for $585,000. Brandon Marshall signed a one-year tender for the $585,000, and now he's a restricted free agent with a second-round tender. Depending upon what Chris does or doesn't do this year will determine whether he's going to get a second round tender or the low tender, which just gives the Packers a right to match if he went out and signed an offer sheet with anybody. And those tenders this year are a shade under 1.7 for the right to match tender, and the second round tender's about 2.55 million this year.
Again, very interesting stuff. You bring to light lots of things that are hard to understand for a guy like me, but appreciate you doing it. The league also just announced the performance-based pay to players for the 2015 season. We learned James Jones was kind of the top earner for the Green Bay Packers. Can you explain the purpose of performance-based pay and whether that impacts the salary cap at all?
It doesn't affect each team's individual salary cap where it comes out of their cap room, but it is taken off the top because before you divvy up what goes into the salary cap.
Okay.
Because it's more like a league-wide benefit to a degree, if you want to call it that, where it's used to supplement the salaries of players who aren't making a lot of money but receive a lot of playing time. This started way back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And when it started, my whole thing was, why is someone like Brett Favre eligible for this pool when he was the highest paid player?
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that they should have some sort of ceiling or like floor or whatever is the right term, that if you're making above a certain amount, you're not eligible to get money out of this pool. Like this year, Aaron Rodgers got like $8,000 out of the pool because it's based on how much the lower your salary is, the more playing time you have, the more you're going to make. And it's typically guys who are undrafted free agents like Malcolm Butler from New England, the Super Bowl hero from Super Bowl 49, made over $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's those guys, late round picks and draft picks from the last, and undrafted guys from the last couple of years, for the most part, who make a lot of money. James Jones made practically $260,000 from this, actually $251,000 from this pool, because he signed late to replace Jordy Nelson once he was cut from the Giants, played for minimum salary, and was on the field a whole lot. That's unusual. You get a veteran like that. But that's what the pool is designed for. It's designed to compensate those guys who aren't making a lot of money but are playing, getting a whole lot of playing time.
One final question before we let you go, Joel. You recently had a column published at CBS Sports that had a Packers angle to it. I think a lot of people were surprised when Brock Osweiler signed a big contract with the Houston Texans, but you actually compared him to a deal signed by Aaron Rodgers. Can you explain how those two compare to each other?
Yeah, you got Brock, who's a guy that sat for basically 3.5 years under his rookie contract until Peyton Manning got hurt, played 7 games, uneven performance, and most people are like, this is outrageous that Houston's going to pay him $37 million fully guaranteed on a 4-year, $72 million contract. Now, I kind of remembered when Aaron Rodgers signed in 2008. He had a year and a half left on his rookie contract. It was after 7 starts. Granted, they were pretty good starts. They could have waited until the end of the year to get a more of a track record to see if it was a mirage or whether he actually could play. And the team didn't go to the playoffs. I think they were 6-10 that year. It was like a bad year and for team-wise. But he performed fine. But at the time, nobody really knew Aaron Rodgers was going to become a Hall of Fame caliber player and arguably the best player in football and a guy who's been, in my mind, considered the best quarterback over the past 5 years. He didn't know that at that time. So it was a bit of a gamble at the time. That's where the analogy comes in. Granted, Green Bay got to see him in practice every day, but practice isn't live bullets.
Mm-hmm.
So when they did do it that early, I was still in the agent business, and I remember talking to some colleagues, and we were going, wow, that's kind of quick for a guy that you don't really know can play yet. And the deal made him the 4th highest-paid player in football at the time on his new money average, because it was about $12.7 a year. That's what was surprising, that Green Bay went out on a limb that quickly. Obviously, it was the right call because of how great Aaron is, and it showed up the next year that removed all doubt. But you have to go back in time and look at what the circumstances were in 2008. It was a risk.
Yeah, definitely. Joel, you're a wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much for joining us and explaining all these things. Definitely appreciate it. Helps us understand the salary cap situation a little bit better, and appreciate the time you took to come on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Joel Corey of CBS Sports, former NFL agent, joining us here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
Since our last episode of Railbird Central on Monday, news came down that B.J. Raji has retired. Well, actually, the phrasing is a so-called hiatus. B.J. Raji has decided not to play for the 2016 NFL season, but has left open the possibility of him returning for 2017 and beyond. Who knows? Maybe even, he kind of left it open. I suppose there's nothing stopping him from coming back halfway through the season if he were so to, so to choose to do that. It's interesting. This came rather out of the blue. Here's another player. Seems to be a growing trend of guys retiring before, they absolutely have to, before their body tells them they can't anymore. So BJ Raji's 29 years old, so he's retiring in essence, and I use the term, I guess, retiring in quotation marks. I know that doesn't exactly come across in a audio form like this, but Raji, before he hits his 30th birthday, calling it quits in football, at least temporarily. If I had to guess, I would say this will probably be for good. I think once you step away, it's going to be that much harder to come back. He's probably, I would assume, not going to keep himself in tip-top physical shape that he would if he were employed by the Green Bay Packers or another NFL team. Not to say that, he might, stay in some shape, work out, lift weights, things like that. I'm just guessing if you're not, employed to do it, that you just won't be doing it religiously or something like that in terms of, hitting the weight room, staying strong, things along those lines that you would have to do if you're a defensive lineman in the NFL like B.J. Raji. The reasons he gave, kind of just that, one, he cited some family concerns. Number two, he just kind of said that, he wasn't really all in for the 2016 season. Thanked many people within the Packers organization. And it's from that aspect, it's kind of admirable. If a player wasn't committed, you kind of like to know that ahead of time. And if he's not, well, then the Packers can move on, and that's what they're going to have to do. And it's going to be tough for the Packers because it does leave them in a little bit of an area where they're a little bit low on depth along the defensive line. Now, it's not a critical, crucial situation where the Packers are so low on depth that they're desperate for anything. They have two guys who they've just signed to contract extensions in the past, 4 or 5 months or whatever it is, dating back to Mike Daniels during the 2015 season, signed a contract extension. So they got Mike Daniels, and then just a month ago or so, they signed LaTroy Guyon to the contract extension. So they got those two guys. They got Dayton Jones. So that, there's something they can build around there on the defensive line. But of course, I mean, the defensive line is one of those positions where you rotate heavily, probably more than anywhere else on the defensive side of the football. I mean, the cornerbacks and the safeties, if you're a starter, if you're Ha-ha, Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett in the secondary, you don't come off the field. Now, defensive linemen, these guys are rotated quite liberally. Even the best ones, even the Mike Daniels, he's rotated in and out to keep him fresh. So you need a lot of defensive linemen. And the Packers probably going to have to go out in the NFL draft and add one. I mean, if I had to guess, you know, and again, things can change and it's all going to depend on who's available when the Packers are on the clock with the 27th overall pick. But it's just such a, it's a good year for defensive linemen in the NFL draft. And I think that, you know, forced to choose right now, I would say the Packers probably going to draft a defensive lineman in the NFL draft, kind of as a replacement or an insurance policy, you might call it, for B.J. Raji. And I'm not guaranteeing anything. They could, you know, certainly they have other needs as well on the front seven of the defense, you know, inside linebacker, outside linebacker. They could add somebody there. They could add an offensive lineman, a guy like Jack Conklin at Michigan State drops to him. Who knows? Lots of things the Packers could do. You know, another name I'll just throw out there, and I don't know how good of a chance there is of this. I personally like Terrence Knighton, Pot Roast, who is a free agent. He's still out there on the market. Last I heard, unless he's just been signed in the past few minutes or something like that, he's available. I think, you know, he's the type of guy who can play a nose tackle position, is not going to be a big time pass rusher for you, but he is the kind of guy that eats up a lot of blocks and can be effective. I wonder if the Packers might possibly, potentially have interest in a guy like him. But anyway, so that was the big news on Monday in the world of the Green Bay Packers. And then on Tuesday, the news is that the Packers brought in free agent tight end Jared Cook for a visit. And of course, something we already talked about with Joel Corey, in that this is big news because it would kind of be the first, you know, big name free agent the Packers would sign this offseason. Yeah, they signed a few guys. We noticed a few days ago on Monday as well, they signed Ray Drew, you know, a street free agent who, you know, was on the practice squad last year. We're not talking about a guy like that, a practice squad guy. Jared Cook is a guy who's, you know, an experienced NFL veteran. I think he's put seven seasons in the NFL, and, you know, very intriguing guy for a couple of reasons. And first of all, simply because of his size and athleticism. He's 6'4". Back when he was coming out for the NFL draft, I mean, we're talking back in 2009, he ran the 40-yard dash in 4.50 seconds, which is really good for a tight end. It, you know, I mean, we're not talking about speedy wide receivers, track guys here. We're talking about a guy who's 6'4" and 250 pounds. You know, when you're that size and you run a 4.5, that's really, really impressive. So he's got the athleticism. He's got the, you know, ability to stretch the field that the Packers don't have in a guy like Richard Rodgers, who, you know, has a great set of hands, can be a good red zone target, but there's certainly things he can't do. And stretching the field, stretching the seam, you know, taking the top off the defense is one of them. And that's something Jared Cook potentially could do. Now, certainly, you know, there's arguments for and against a guy like this, because, you know, I think there were some expectations that he would be better in the NFL because of this athleticism. You know, it raised the bar a little bit. And by no means has Jared Cook been, you know, a fringe NFL player or anything like that. He's been a good but not great NFL tight end. I mean, there's been seasons where he's caught 50-plus passes. And for a tight end, you know, that's good. Again, not great. And there's reasons about, you know, for this. You know, he has a reputation of dropping the football. You know, he's an okay blocker. I think people feel like he could be better, you know, simply, again, looking at his size, or he should be better at that. The Rams had, you know, a poor running game this past season, despite having the, you know, rookie of the year running back and Todd Gurley. But, I mean, again, take a look at some of the reasons, you know, dig a little bit deeper, and you look that, you know, Jared Cook has never really worked with an upper echelon quarterback ever in 7 years. I mean, he worked with Sam Bradford for, you know, the majority of it. That's probably the quarterback he worked the most with. But, you know, Sam Bradford's just a middle-of-the-pack quarterback. You know, if you rank him 1 to 32 of all the starting quarterbacks, he's middle of the pack, if that even. And, you know, he's worked with other guys that, you know, have been there through over the years, you know, rotating in and out, whether because of injury or Sam Bradford leaves or what have you. I mean, just never has really worked with a, you know, a top flight quarterback. And you wonder, I mean, if Jared Cook were to work with Aaron Rodgers, might that change? Could that be a difference? Could that unlock the potential? Could that be the key to a resurgence for him realizing his potential? It's an interesting debate. And I tend to think that, you know, assuming the money is right, you know, the Packers have, as we said, $15 million. There's room to add a guy like this because, I mean, look at this in the context as well. You know, beyond Richard Rodgers, there's not a whole lot of depth. I mean, there's depth at the tight end position. There's uncertainty, we'll say that, because, first of all, Andrew Corliss, longtime Packers tight end, been with them for the past 6 years. He's a free agent, and no guarantee he'll be coming back. He's a guy who's had a lengthy injury history. He's a guy who's been in trouble with the law. So no guarantee the Packers will bring him back. They might, certainly. It's just uncertain at this point. I think you're looking at a guy who Jared Cook has been more productive than Andrew Corliss, has more athleticism than Andrew Corliss, has been healthier than Andrew Corliss. So I think, you know, if you just look at it like that, if Andrew Corliss is your number two tight end, I think Jared Cook is an upgrade over that. And if you look at the other guys on the roster, you know, they got Justin Perillo, who they just re-signed as an exclusive rights free agent. They've got last year's rookie, Kennard Backman. They've got Mitchell Henry. I mean, these three guys I just mentioned, these aforementioned three, they've got 11 career catches combined between the three of them, and all 11 of them by Justin Perillo. Neither of the other two have ever caught a pass in an NFL regular season game yet before. So there's certainly a lot of uncertainty in whether they, you know, going to be anything more than a number three tight end. They might, but the jury is still out on them. And that's why you would want to add a guy like Jared Cook, who, you know, I think, again, if your expectations are, well, you know, I expect Jared Cook to be a Pro Bowler in the Packers offense, you're going to come away disappointed if that's your expectation. I think he can be a very nice complementary piece, and I think that's what the Packers need for a guy like Richard Rodgers, who, you know, has his limitations. I think there's certain things Richard Rodgers does very well. Like we said, the hands are the best on arguably the best on the entire team. No question about that. I think everybody acknowledges that, but the ability to gain yards after contact, things like that, when he's running those out routes and he catches the short pass and just, you know, doesn't have that ability to break a tackle and get that first down always. You know, it happens once in a while, certainly, but not as often as you would like. And maybe Jared Cook can provide that for the Green Bay Packers. I would like to see him come to some sort of agreement because, you know, you got to look at it through the lens as well that Jared Cook, he was released a few weeks ago by the Los Angeles Rams. And because of that, he is also a street free agent. He is not an unrestricted free agent. And that is an important distinction because Jared Cook will not count against the compensatory draft pick formula. You know, the Packers, after Casey Hayward just signed with the San Diego Chargers for an average of about $5 million, just north of $5 million per year, the Packers are probably going to receive as high as a fifth-round draft choice in compensation for his loss, assuming they lose more free agents than they gain, unrestricted ones. You know, Jared Cook will not count against this formula. He will not offset the loss of Casey Hayward because they fall into different categories. Casey Hayward was an unrestricted free agent. Jared Cook, a street free agent. So that's an important distinction there. That's why the Packers 2 years ago signed both Julius Peppers and LaTroy Guyon. They were both street free agents. It didn't cost the Packers you know, the compensatory draft pick in order to sign them. So that kind of, you know, feeds into it as well. I would really like the Packers to do this. I think he can help. Hopefully, you know, playing on a contending NFL caliber team with a good quarterback, that'll bring out the best in him, which in turn will make the Packers better. You know, it's interesting. I wish I knew who this was by. It might have been by former Packers linebacker Brady Papinga, just reading on Twitter the other day. You know, people say, you know, looking for the free agent that's going to put you over the top. You know, every team would love that, right? Finding the free agent that's going to put you over the top. And I think it's the goal of it's the desire or the wish of every NFL team. And certainly their fans might certainly cite that or say that. But I think Brady Papinga, if I'm correct, and I could be wrong, you can tell me if I'm wrong. But he took to Twitter saying, has there ever really been a free agent outside of Reggie White and maybe Peyton Manning that's ever put a team over the top? It just doesn't happen, or it happens so rarely, you know, once every 10, 15 years that it just, you know, that it does, you're not finding the free agents that put you over the top. You just hope they can make you better. You know, I don't think anybody's expecting Jared Cook to come in and be the NFL MVP here. You would love it if he's a Pro Bowler, but I don't think, you know, he has to be that level to make the Packers better. Just all he's got to do is improve, you know, be an improvement over Andrew Quarles, be an improvement over what they had last year, and he'll, you know, have his usefulness. He'll be utilized. And, you know, if we're talking about $3 million a season or so, I think that's great with a guy like him. I'd be all for it if that's, you know, roughly the way the Packers structure his contract, and there's a lot of different ways you can do it in terms of signing bonuses and how many years, and, you know, not privy to all that. And we'll see. You know, the Packers brought in Owen Daniels for a visit 2 years ago as a free agent. Nothing ever panned out with that. You know, is it going to be the same situation here with Jared Cook? Hard to say. Apparently his visit took place on Monday. That's already 2 days ago, and there's been no action since that time. So I'd like to see something get done if the numbers are right, and we'll continue to monitor the situation. But last segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Wednesday, or over the course of the next 24 hours, it's day 8 of free agency in the NFL, so we're officially entering week 2. The second week of the new league year. Is anything going to happen today on the Jared Cook front or any of the other Packers free agents they might have? You know, a lot of their own free agents remain unsigned. Guys like James Jones, James Starks, Andrew Quarles, Brett Goode, John Kuhn. You know, I can't guarantee any deals are going to get done over the next 24 hours or so. But the one thing we do know is going to happen for sure today that impacts the Packers organization is a very busy pro day schedule. So while free agency is taking place, Packers scouts are going to be out and about at about a dozen pro day workouts today on Wednesday. We're getting right into the meat of the schedule. If the first few pro days, you know, first few days of pro days early in the month of March are, you know, there's maybe only a handful, and then you get down to the end of the month and there's only a handful any particular day. Well, we're getting into the most busiest time for scouts, you know, right now is they're, you know, probably racking up the frequent flyer miles to taking planes and I'm sure driving from university to university. There's a dozen taking place today, at least. I know some of the big name university, big name football programs, blue blood programs where, you know, pro days are taking place today are places like Michigan State, Georgia, Arkansas, and there's more. Virginia Tech, I can't name all dozen off the top of my head here, but I did round them up at today's Packers calendar post at 24/7 Sports. So if you're interested, you can go check out that list there. But yeah, that's what's going to happen today for sure in the world of the Green Bay Packers, and maybe more if a free agent signing comes to light. Those kind of things frequently happen out of the blue and are unpredictable. We don't know if they're going to happen. They might, and we'll have it covered if they do. So stay tuned. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here this Friday morning at Railbird Central. Shows every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition, podcasted and on demand later in the day. Already have Friday's guest lined up. We're going to have Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog join us. He joins us for a monthly engagement, first Friday of every month. Well, we didn't get him last Friday, so we're going to have him on this Friday instead. So looking forward to that. And we'll see you, folks. Have a good day. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, appreciate if you'd give us a rating and a review on iTunes. Just search iTunes, Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So the one small thing we ask in return, if you listen to the show, give us a rating and a review. It'll only get to take up a few seconds of your time. You don't have to write this lengthy review or anything. We just appreciate it if you would do that. It helps get word out about the show. So we'd love that. So thanks a lot, folks. Have a good Wednesday. We'll talk to you again on Friday. On behalf of everybody at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kiravu. Have a good day. I leave you today with a song called Barker by Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.